It simply comes from the heart. Thank you, baby. I appreciate you. You don't know how important that is for your man. That little bit of encouragement makes him want to do more. You think because we're hard and we don't want to cuddle that we don't need that encouragement, but we do. And the woman who comes along and says, "You're so big and strong, and you're everything I need," well, we're going to go get some more of that. Need number two, your loyalty. Please understand that our love is wholly different from a woman's love. A woman's love is emotional, nurturing, heartfelt, sweet and kind, and all-encompassing. You can slice a knife through it, it's so thick. And when she's in love with you, she is loyal to you. She can't see herself with someone else because, for her, no one else will do. That's a woman's love. But for men, love is loyalty. We want you to show your love to us by being loyal. That means that no matter what, you're going to stand beside us. We get laid off, we know you're going to stay. Even if we're not drawing a paycheck, you get around your girlfriends, you're going to say with great enthusiasm, "That's my man. I'm loyal to him." Idris Elba, Denzel, Usher or the like walks into the room, money dripping from their suit jacket, floating on air and glistening and all that. You're going to hold on to our hand a little tighter and say from the bottom of your heart, "I don't want any of those shiny, rich, fine men, because my man is the only one for me." We can only hope that's what you'll say. That's loyalty, our kind of love. To men, they are one and the same. The kind of love you require is beautiful, but our love isn't like your love. It's different, though it's still love. And a man's love is a very powerful thing. It's amazing love. If your loyalty is real and unimpeachable, that man will kill concrete for you. He ain't going no damn where. Need number three, the cookie. No-brainer. Men need sex. We love it. Ain't nothing on this planet like it. Nothing else we want that bad on a continuous basis. Nothing else we simply cannot live without. Take our house, take our job, the 69 Impala, our last pair of gaiters, but please, please don't hold out on the cookie. We don't care about anything else. We need the cookie. We need to be physically engaged with the woman we love, the woman who is loyal to us and supports us. And the way that we do that is by making love. The emotional stuff, the talking, the cuddling, the holding hands and bonding, that's y'all's thing. We'll do those things because we know it's important to you. But please understand, the way we men connect is by having sex. Period. It's how we plug in, recharge, and reconnect. I don't know of a man who doesn't need this. Ask any guy if sex is important in a relationship, and the one who says no is lying. I just haven't met that guy yet. When you meet him, let's get him to the Smithsonian. He's that special and rare. But the rest of us men, we need sex like we need air. You got about a good month at best without it. And then he's going to get it from somewhere else, unless you're carrying his child. I'm telling you, gangs are built on support and loyalty. Dudes go out and form gangs built on those two things right there. The only thing missing is sex, and that's where the girl gang members come in. It's the same thing with motorcycle clubs, the country club, the Elks, the Masons, frats. The whole of a man's world is built on these three principles. There's not one day of the week that we are not waking up in the pursuit of it. Let's say you're not a member of Alpha Phi Alpha, Kappa Alpha Psi, or you're an almighty member of Omega Psi Phi, and someone who hasn't pledged their undying support and love to frat on a line for at least 6 weeks, be that person putting on their colors and let them find out you haven't pledged, that you didn't cross over. Do you know what the hell would happen if those boys found out you're not frat? Messing with their loyalty, their colors? Man, not nary a day. Be a Crip and go to a Bloods house and see what happens. Try going into that country club and you're not a member. Loyalty, support, that's what men are made of. And can't one of them survive without sex? Oh, he'll work with you if you have an off week. If he loves you, that is. If he didn't care, he wouldn't bother to try to get your cookie. He'd just go on and get it from somewhere else. But if he's into you, and you're cutting back, rationing it out, you're not doing what you did when you all first started dating, he's going to line up someone who will. Please believe me when I tell you this. He will tell everybody, this is my girl right here. But meanwhile, he will have another woman lined up and waiting to give him what he needs and wants, the cookie. Don't get it wrong. We're not animals. We know things change. The baby comes and the doctor says, we have to wait 6 weeks, or your monthly is on the way. Your hormones are acting up, and you're not in the mood. But the excuses can't go on forever. You can play your man short if you want to. No matter how much a man loves his wife, his family, his house, his role as the man of the house, the one who's bringing in all the money into family account, maybe even putting a little extra into yours, if you mess around and start shelling out the cookie in crumbs, it's going to be a problem. Speaking of my own experience, I recently turned 50, and I'm telling you right now, don't play me short in this area. At my age, I'll work with you for a little longer because I'm busy. I got a company to run. I got a schedule to keep. I'm on the road, on the stage, on the radio, writing books, acting, supporting my own charity, and working with others. I'm on the run, and at my age, I can't afford to mess up, mentally, emotionally, or spiritually. Hell is no longer an option for me. I'm doing what I can to get to the gate, and it could be any day now. If I start messing around, I might have a stroke and miss out on my home going. But the truth is, if I can't go home and relieve my stress, there's a problem. If I've talked to the Lord and tried to get you motivated to give me some of the cookie, and you're still coming up with reasons why you just can't be intimate with me, something is gonna change. And I'm ready to bet things aren't so different in your household. You might have been up all night for a week with a sick child, gotten up early to get the other onto the school bus before you hit the road for that rush hour commute to work, gone to battle with your coworkers and boss for 8 hours with nothing but a 15-minute break to swallow an inadequate, unsatisfying lunch, and then hit the rush hour traffic back home to start your second job, the feeding and care of your kids. There's dinner to be cooked, and homework to be checked, and laundry to be done, and the list goes on. By the time your man checks in with you, the last thing on your mind is giving a positive response to what a friend of mine called the shoulder tap. You know what I'm talking about, she said. It's when you finally drop into the bed exhausted, and you're halfway through your favorite show you watch when you just want to zone out. And here he comes, tapping you on your shoulder, asking for sex. It's just annoying. What that same friend of mine didn't know, though, was that her husband was tired of the shoulder tap, too. In his mind, he'd also worked all day, just as hard as her, and though he may not have done all the exact things she'd done during the course of the evening at home, he, too, put in work around the house, and like her, needed to wind down from his day. She liked watching television. He liked to have sex. She was always too tired to have sex. He was tired of not having sex. So while she unwound to her favorite shows, he unwound out of the house with another woman. Now, I'm not saying what he did was right, but as a man, I can understand the logic behind what he eventually ended up doing. And if I were in their bedroom before all of the ugliness from his cheating ways went down, I would have given them what I found to be some very sage advice. Acknowledge the ones you love. That means that if a man sees his woman had a hard day, and she could stand some more help around the house to make the evenings go more smoothly, her man needs to step up his game. If she cooks, he does the dishes. If she gets the kids' clothes ready for tomorrow, he gets their homework ready for tomorrow. If she gets the kids off to bed, he gets his wife off in bed by setting the mood, straightening up, running her a bath, letting her settle in with a glass of wine, whatever it takes to make it clear to her that having sex with the woman he loves is not only a release, but an act of love. And she, perhaps, will be more willing to reciprocate, not with annoyance, but with the sheer giddiness in knowing how it feels to feel wanted. But understand that no man is going to wine and dine his wife every night in order to have sex with her. That's unreasonable. Sometimes he's just going to want to have you, no frills, without being forced to feel like he's added another chore to your list of things to do. Every man needs that from his woman, every last one of us. To sum up, we've got to have these three things, support, loyalty, and sex from you, or we're going to go. You can shop for us, cook dinner every night, and make sure our favorite peanut butter is in the cabinet to show us that you're paying attention and you care. But what we really need from you when our day goes bad is those three things. You give me that when I come home, and I'll go back out there and fight this war for you. The moment a woman isn't doing those three things for her man, I can promise you, he'll get somebody who will. We cannot survive without these things. Not for 90 days we can't. You may not like what I'm saying, but ask any man about these words and whether they're true, and that man will tell you this one simple thing. It's true. Support, loyalty, the cookie. If you supply these three things, you'll have on your hands a man who will do anything you need and want him to do for you. Pure and simple. Chapter 4. We need to talk, and other words that make men run for cover. We need to talk. For a man, few words are as menacing as those four, especially when a woman is the one saying them and he's on the receiving end. Those four words can mean only two things to men. Either we did something wrong, or worse, you really, literally just want to talk. Now, we understand that we're not the essence of perfection, and there are going to be times when you're mad at us and need to let us know it. We get that, though we don't necessarily want to have to concentrate on an hour-long angry lecture about how we screwed up. But even more, no man wants to sit around gabbing with you like we're one of your girlfriends. Ever. It's just not in our DNA to lounge around, sip coffee, and dab at our eyes with tissue as if we're in an AA meeting or on some psychologist's couch trying to get things off our chest. When men are talking, and especially when they're listening, it's with purpose. We don't vent. We just want to fix whatever situation is upsetting the balance. We understand that this frustrates you time and time again, because sometimes you want to talk to share and get someone else's take on a situation. You know, put a listening ear on it. But seriously, that's what your girlfriends are for. You lay out your problem, and she'll commiserate with you, give you all kinds of, yeah, girls, and I know that's right, and nod and agree and tell you stories about how the same thing happened to her. She'll even go on to give you concrete examples of every other time something like this has happened to other women throughout the history of the world. And hours later, you all will get up from the couch, having solved nothing, but feeling so much better. Consider the following, which we'll call Exhibit A. You. I walked into work today, and before I could get to my desk, I saw Tanya walking over to the coffee machine, and wouldn't you know, that heifer had on the same shirt as me. Your girlfriend. You better stop. Which one? You. The blue one. You know, the one with the orange flower print. I got it from that store across town. On sale? Your girlfriend. You mean the one you found on the $29.99 rack in the back? The same day I found those shoes at the store just down the street? You. That's the one. I wore that shirt to work a few weeks ago, and she complimented me on it. And next thing I know, she ran to the store and bought my shirt and is wearing it to work. Can you believe it? Do you know how that made me feel? Your girlfriend. Oh, hell to the no. Are you serious? That's horrible. She got some nerve. For sure. This conversation could go on for hours, morphing into all kinds of side conversations that have absolutely nothing to do with the issue at hand. That some woman was wearing the same blouse as you on the same day in the same office. With a man, exactly 10 seconds into the conversation, he'd arrive at the fix. I present to you Exhibit B. You. I walked into work today, and before I could get to my desk, I saw Tanya walking over to the coffee machine, and wouldn't you know that heifer had on the same shirt as me? Your man. Really? Don't wear it anymore. End the conversation. It's that simple for us. In this particular instance, and many more examples such as this, we can't get more worked up than that. How you felt at work while you had to sit there with this other woman on the other side of the room with the same blouse on is irrelevant to us. As far as we're concerned, the problem has already been fixed. You came home. You're not looking at the woman in the identical blouse anymore. And if you don't wear that particular blouse to the office again, you won't have to deal with that particular problem again. In our mind, problem solved. No more talking. All of this is to say that we men aren't in the talking business. We're in the fix-it business. From the moment we come out of the womb, we're taught to protect, profess, and provide. Communicating, nurturing, listening to problems, and trying to understand them without any obligation to fix them is simply not what boys are raised to do. We don't let them cry. We don't ask them how they feel about anything. We don't encourage them to express themselves in any meaningful way beyond showing how manly they are. Let a little boy fall off his bike and scrape his knee. See how fast everyone tells him to get up and shake it off. And stop all that doggone crying. Be a man, we demand. There's no discussion about how he felt when he hit the ground. Nobody's asking him to talk about whether he's too scared to get back on the bike and try again. Our automatic response is to tell him to get over it, get back on the bike, and figure out how to ride it so he doesn't fall again. Now that he's grown and in a relationship, you expect that same boy who was told to keep quiet and keep it moving to be a man who can sit and listen and communicate and nurture? I'm telling you now, your expectations are off. Women have different moods and ideas in their head, and you all expect us to fall in line, and if we don't, it's a problem. You're telling your girlfriends, he won't talk to me, and I can't get him to open up. But opening up is not what we do. Profess, provide, and protect. All our lives, that's what we men have been taught and encouraged to do. This, we've been told, is how a man shows his love. And the fix falls firmly into the provide category. For sure, provision isn't just about money. For us, providing also is about righting what's wrong and figuring out what's going to keep everybody happy. Because any man with sense knows that when mama's happy, we're all going to be happy. And when you're happy, there's a great return for us. So we provide and fix. I'm telling you right now, if you go to your man with a situation that's fixable and he doesn't try to fix it, he is not your man. He is not in love with you. Go ahead. I dare you to try it for yourself. When your man comes over, tell him, you know, I just can't stand this kitchen this way. The color just throws me all off. The cabinets are all wrong. They don't go with the stove, and I can't get my mind right in here when I'm trying to cook. If he's all the way in it with you, he will say, without hesitation, what color you want this kitchen to be, baby? Tell him pink, and see if by next Saturday the whole kitchen isn't painted pink, cabinets and all. He will see your distress, understand that if you don't like the cabinets and the walls and the way the stove functions, you're going to walk into that kitchen with your mouth poked out, phoning in the home-cooked meals, because you just can't hook up the steaks and baked potatoes like you want to in a kitchen you can't stand. And we definitely don't want that. So to the hardware store we will go. Even if we don't have money for a complete remodel, we'll go and find you some hardware for the cabinets. Maybe some new handles and some sandpaper. Lots of sandpaper. To get that color you can't stand off your cabinets, so that we can refinish them exactly the way you want them to be finished. A man who really loves you can't wait to do this for you, because in the back of his mind, he can envision you with a smile on your face, setting his place at the head of the table, and serving up a fine meal in the new kitchen he fixed just for you. Oh, make no mistake about it. We want to see you happy. But it's also all about the return, ladies. Please understand and respect the return. Of course, we operate under the assumption that the fix isn't always going to be on point. We stay off balance because even though we're responding in a way that we believe is logical, our women will inevitably respond emotionally, which always throws a monkey wrench right in the middle of what we're trying to accomplish. Most of the time, it feels to us that your response is determined not wholly by what is rational, but mostly by how you're feeling that particular day, at that particular moment. A perfect example. Your man can lick you on the same breast with the same amount of moisture in the same exact position that had you hollering and screaming last night, and this evening, you will look at him and say, with conviction, "What are you doing? I don't want that." And now he's all confused. Because, hey, if you lick him on that spot and he liked it yesterday, he's gonna like it today, and tomorrow, and the day after that, too. But you... not so much. What you like and how you like it seemingly shifts from day to day, sometimes even moment to moment, and that is not logical to us. We can't figure it out, ever. If we get it right, great, but sometimes we're just going to get it wrong. A lot of times, the more inexperienced of us men are going to completely screw it up. For example, consider a woman who walks into the room in a visible huff. A guy who's young and not too smart in this relationship business may ask his lady what's wrong, and she may say, "Nothing." That fool will be the one to say, "Okay, cool." He will also be the one who gets laid out with a, "Damn it, you saw me tripping and you're just gonna walk off without seeing about me?" Yep, that guy is going to have a lot of fixing to do. But the more experienced man, the one who can read his lady's moods and tell when something is wrong, is going to ask her what's up. And no matter how many times she says nothing, he's going to ask again and again until she starts coming clean and opens up. Though in his heart of hearts, he will be hoping to God there's really nothing wrong. And if there is something wrong, he will be able to just fix it, because he doesn't want to see her pout. Even when he thinks she is done talking, he'll push her until the issue is resolved, because he can't leave it at, "Wow, sorry that happened." He will immediately launch into the fix. This is not to say you'll never have a conversation with your man that lasts longer than 2 minutes. We understand that sometimes we're going to have to give a little more in terms of communicating with you. That every now and then, we're going to have to spill our guts and reveal what's going on in our heads. We also know that you may just want to lie in our arms and cuddle and talk it out with absolutely no resolution. We're capable of doing this too. It's not easy, but it can be done. We know that sitting and listening and even participating in a long conversation about your feelings is necessary and inevitable. But don't be surprised if those conversations are few and far between. Detailed conversation is what you have with your girlfriends. Men just want to hear the problem and then fix it. It's about maintaining this balance, the two of you understanding exactly what each other requires to be innately happy, and then trying to provide at least some of that so that both mates feel like they're in this relationship with the other. For men, that means every once in a while, they may have to sit and be still and just listen. For women, it would go a long way if they respected the encryption of manhood, that we're too focused on who we are, what we do, and how much we make to spend a whole lot of time sitting around pondering things that can't be fixed. Of course, it would go a long way if women stopped opening the conversation with, "We need to talk." The moment you say that, our defenses go up. The repair tools come out, the sweat starts rolling, and we're sprinting through the events of the past weeks trying to figure out what we did wrong, when we did it, and how we're going to fix it so that we're not in trouble anymore. In fact, I think it's a good idea that if you just want to vent, you start the conversation with something simple like, "Honey, look, nothing is really wrong. I just want to tell somebody something." That's a great opening line. It allows us to relax, take our foot down from the witness stand, put away our fix-it tools, and actually sit and listen to what you have to say. Part 2. Why Men Do What They Do. Chapter 5. First Things First. He wants to sleep with you. We were doing the Steve Harvey Morning Show live by remote in Detroit, and a woman came up to the podium to say hello to me and the crew. A really attractive girl, nicely dressed with beautiful dark skin, pretty white teeth, gorgeous body, really put together all around. And when she started talking, she really threw me because I could hear in her voice that she was mature, but she just didn't look like she sounded. So I asked the lady how old she was. She said she was 42. Blew me away. I didn't think she was a day older than 30. Then I asked her how many kids she had. 5, she said, smiling from ear to ear. "I've got 3 of my own, and I adopted 2. Now I'm sitting here thinking, wow, that's really slick. She's over age 40. She's taking care of not only the kids she gave birth to, but 2 more she took in out of the kindness and generosity of her heart. And she looks years younger than she really is. She's really got it going on." Be clear, I wasn't about to do anything with this information, because guess what? I'm a happily married man. Emphasis on happily. But some years ago, that conversation would have gone down a wholly different way, and it would not have involved me asking her anything about her kids, where she works, how she's living, none of that. But a guy who was all in her space while we continued doing our show, that's another story. He clearly had plans for this lady. You could tell just by the way he was leaning into her, hanging on her every word. Oh, he was talking to her like there weren't hundreds of people surrounding them, like my co-host and I weren't in the middle of a show. I knew what he was trying to get to, but clearly she had no clue. In front of everyone during a commercial break, I asked her, "What does he want?" She laughed and gave me a confused look. "Nothing," she giggled. "We're just making small talk." Mind you, the guy trying to talk to her isn't saying a word. He knows that I know. And after a few more commercial breaks and a lot more of his obvious moves, I finally told her he was looking for much more than a simple conversation. "He wants something from you," I said. "I can prove it to you." Now the crowd, full of mostly women, is goading me on. "Here's the deal," I said. "Turn around right now. Look in his face. And do not take your eyes off his eyes. Now tell him how many kids you got and watch his reaction." The man seemed calm until she got to the word 5. He reeled back like a spooked horse. His whole facial structure changed. And even though he covered his mouth, he couldn't keep his surprised "oh" from escaping his lips. He couldn't get away from her fast enough. The next break he was down on the other end of the venue, 50 feet away in some other woman's face. See, he wanted something from her. But that something didn't include 5 kids. He had a good job. He appeared intelligent. He had told me he was making good money. Clearly, however, he couldn't foresee his money split those many ways. When he was flirting with his woman, all he envisioned was he and her getting down to it, no strings attached. My co-host just laughed and laughed and asked me how I knew all of this. It's easy. When a man approaches you, he has a plan, and the main plan is to sleep with you, or to find out what it takes to sleep with you. Here's a generalization, but in my experience, it's true. Women love to sit and talk for no apparent reason but to talk. But we men, we're just not cut out to chit-chat for the sake of chit-chat. We don't have time for it. We men are very simple people. If we like what we see, we're coming over there. If we don't want anything from you, we're not coming over there. Period. Please remember this part right here so you can always remind yourself the next time a man steps to you. A man always wants something. Always. And when it comes to women, that plan is always to find out two things. One, if you're willing to sleep with him, and two, if you are, how much it will cost to get you to sleep with him. That's his mission in the club. That's his charge in the lunchroom at the office. That's what he's up to when he skips past all those seats at the church and sits down in the pew right next to you. If a man sees you and asks you how you're doing, what do you think he came over there for? He didn't come over to learn anything from you, to find out about your interests and likes and wants. That's what women do when they're interested in getting to know someone. For a man, it's really less complicated. He liked what he saw from across the room, and now he's going to go over there and get it. He doesn't care anything about your personality or what you do for a living. Your friends mean nothing to him. And whether you know Jesus is irrelevant. He just wants to know if he might be able to sleep with you. And he's talking to you to determine exactly how much he has to invest to get what he wants. When I say invest, I'm not talking solely about monetary values. I'm talking about your values, your requirements. He's trying to see if your price is too high, if it's affordable, if he can get it on credit, whether he can get it tonight. If you don't lay out any requirements, then you're free. Game on. He knows he can get you to the bed with minimal effort, but if you tell him up front you have requirements, that you need his time, his respect, his attention, then he knows you're expensive, that he's going to need to put in work to get the cookie. For some men, that cost may be too high. They're just looking for a good time and have no interest in investing time and respect and a commitment. One man may assess right away, man, I got to go by there 2 or 3 times a week. Gas is $5 a gallon. I got this other woman I'm hollering at. I'm going to have to call her and all of that. No, that price is out of my range. For another man, your sticker price may be affordable. This is useful information to you because now you know when a man approaches you, you can cut through the riffraff, lay down your requirements, which I'll talk about later, and determine right away whether he's willing to pay for what it is he's looking for. Okay, so ladies, it's no secret now, and you can act accordingly. When you're not aware that all men have plans, you're not placing requirements on him. And if you're not setting any ground rules, then you're essentially telling him that you're open for his rules. You've established that you don't care how often he calls, when he comes by, how often you all talk, and whether he opens your door. This means that he'll call you when he gets ready. He won't be opening any of your doors, and even though you ask him to be there at 7, he won't show up until 8. All because you didn't A, acknowledge that a man always has a plan, and B, act accordingly. This is precisely what was on my father-in-law's mind when one of my daughters brought home her alleged boyfriend to the house for a family dinner. You should know that my father-in-law is one of the smartest men I ever met in my life. He's a man I look up to, and I look up to very few men. The things that come out of his mouth are usually, if not always, on point and make me think. The same was true this particular evening when he lined up this boy on the living room couch and asked him plain as day, "So what's your plan with my granddaughter?" The young man, about 30, asked very simply, "What do you mean by that?" "I mean just what I asked," my father-in-law said. "What is your plan?" "I don't have a plan," he said. "Then what are you doing?" my father-in-law asked. "I'm just trying to get to know her," he insisted. "But what's your plan? Where is this going?" my father-in-law snapped back. Finally, under the pressure of the questioning, the squared shoulders, and two straight-faced black men making it clear we know the game, the boy finally broke down and said those four fateful words, "We're just kicking it." My father-in-law sat there and stared at him for a minute, satisfied, finally, that he'd gotten to the bottom of it. He tasted blood. "Okay, then, cool," my father-in-law said quietly. "Let's share that with her, that you're just kicking it. Let's see how she feels being the kicked one. Let's take that back to her." She looked so crazy when a few minutes later, we let her know about her man's plans, that they're just kicking it. Because she knows from our constant talks and updates and sessions about men that when it comes to relationships, you're either being kicked or you're potential long-term material. It can't be both. Clearly, he had a plan that was different from what she wanted. Luckily, my daughter had her granddad and me to help her decipher her man's plan. But not every woman has a father figure around to hip her to the game. Now, when that man comes smiling all up in your face and talking like he's really into you, act like you know, because now you do. He wants to sleep with you. What's your price? If you let him know up front, he will let you know up front if it's too high a price for him to pay. And then you can move on. Chapter 6 Sports Fish versus Keepers. How men distinguish between the marrying types and the playthings. Anyone who really knows me knows about my passion for fishing. I've always loved the tranquil moments that come with the sport. Sitting on the bank or the deck of a boat out on the open water, there is no greater peace. But I also crave the sudden explosion of adrenaline that comes when I feel a fish on the other end of my line. You can't imagine the thrill that comes when I have to use every bit of my might and mind to see if I can keep this fish hooked, reel it in, and get it in the boat. And then comes the hard part, deciding whether to keep the fish or throw it back. So in addition to fishing, hooking them, and reeling them in, I get another rush when I'm forced to look at them, see how they feel, and evaluate whether they make it on my stringer. And trust me, a fish has to be really special to make it onto my stringer. Otherwise, it gets tossed back into the water so I can fish some more. A man fishes for two reasons. He's either sport fishing or fishing to eat, which means he's either going to try to catch the biggest fish he can, take a picture of it, admire it with his buddies, and toss it back to sea. Or he's going to take that fish on home, scale it, fillet it, toss it in some cornmeal, fry it up, and put it on his plate. This, I think, is a great analogy for how men seek out women. See, men are by nature hunters, and women have been put in the position of being the prey. Think about it. It used to be that a man picked a wife, a man asked the woman to dinner, a man had to get permission from a woman's father to have her hand in marriage, and even in some cases, to date her. We pursued. In fact, we've been taught all our lives that it was not only a good thing to chase women, but natural. Women have bought into this for years, too. How many times have you or one of your girls said, "I like it when a man pursues me," or "I need him to romance me and give me flowers and make me feel like I'm wanted"? Flowers, jewelry, phone calls, dates, sweet talk. These are all the weapons in our hunting arsenal when we're coming for you. But the question always remains, once we hook you, what will we do with you? Take a cue from my love of fishing. My philosophy is that men will treat women like one of these two things, a sports fish or a keeper. How we meet, how the conversation goes, how the relationship develops, and the demands you make on a man will all determine whether you'll be treated like a sports fish, a throwback, or a keeper. The kind of woman a man can envision settling down with, and the way we separate the two is very simple, as I explain next. A sports fish. Doesn't have any rules, requirements, respect for herself, or guidelines, and we men can pick up her scent a mile away. She's the party girl who takes a sip of her Long Island iced tea or a shot of her Patron, then announces to her suitor that she just wants to date and see how it goes. And she's the conservatively dressed woman at the office who is a master at networking but clueless about how to approach men. She has no plans for any ongoing relationships, is not expecting anything in particular from a man, and sets absolutely not nary one condition or restriction on anything standing before her. She makes it very clear that she's just along for whatever's getting ready to happen. For sure, as soon as she lets a man know, through words and action, that he can treat her just any old kind of way, he will do just that. Men will stand in line to sign up for that. Believe me. A keeper. Never gives in easily, and the standards and requirements start the moment you open your mouth. See, she understands her power and wields it like a samurai sword. She commands, not demands, respect, just by the way she carries herself. You can walk up to her and give her your best game, and while she may be impressed by what you say, that's no guarantee that she's going to let the conversation go any further, much less give you her phone number and agree to give you some of her valuable time. Men automatically know from the moment she opens her mouth that if they want her, they'll have to get in line with her standards and requirements or keep it moving because she's done with the game and isn't interested in playing. But she will also send all the signals that she is capable of being loyal to a man and taking good care of him, appreciative of what he's bringing to the relationship, and ready for love, true, long-lasting love. Newsflash. It's not the guy who determines whether you're a sports fish or a keeper. It's you. Don't hate the player, hate the game. When a man approaches you, you're the one with total control over the situation. Whether he can talk to you, buy you a drink, dance with you, get your number, take you home, see you again, all of that. We certainly want these things from you. That's why we talk to you in the first place. But it's you who decides if you're going to give us any of the things we want and how exactly we're going to get them. Where you stand in our eyes is dictated by your control over the situation. Every word you say, every move you make, every signal you give to a man will help him determine whether he should try to play you, be straight with you, or move on to the next woman to do a little more sport fishing. I like to think that the way you play this situation is much like how you climb the ladder at work. Think about it. Dating is a lot like a business. The best way to become successful is to master and control things you have control over. When I first started in show business, I knew I wanted to be a top-flight comedian. But because the club owners didn't know me well, all I could get was a gig as the opening act. The first guy up. 15 minutes to do my thing and then off the stage I went. Still, I knew that if I was on my game, showed up on time, networked, and most important, gave thought-provoking, funny performances that made the audiences and the club owners remember me, I could get the ultimate job as the headliner. The comedian who gets his name on the marquee in 45 minutes to make people scream with laughter. I controlled my 15 minutes by making people laugh hard enough to remember me, and then parlayed it into gigs as the featured comedian, the performer who gets 30 minutes on the stage. And then I did the same thing with my 30 minutes on stage, making people laugh so hard that club owners didn't have any other choice but to make me the featured act. See, my success in getting to be one of the kings of comedy was based on my desire and ability to control my product, my performance, which ultimately made me exactly who I wanted to be. And doing that got me exactly what I wanted, success. The same applies to a woman who wants to be a keeper rather than a sports fish. You control what you can control, your image. The way you conduct yourself, the way you let men talk to and approach you, and use that to get the relationship you want. Let me bring it home for you. Imagine you're in the health club, and you're on the stair climber, in your tight red athletic bra, matching form-fitting spandex gym pants, glistening and dewy with sweat, getting your workout on, looking really fit and sexy, a good-looking guy comes in. He's handsome, fit, no rings on his fingers, and when he walks up to the treadmill next to where you're working out, the chemistry between the two of you is electric. He smiles, you smile back. You move to another machine. He moves to one not too far from you. He glances at you, you glance back. And when the two of you are finished working out, he goes all out, comes up to you and breaks the ice. "Looked like you had a good workout," he might say, looking you in your eyes and then letting his gaze linger somewhere around your hips. A woman who takes good care of herself, nice. How you respond, the way you control this exchange, will mean all the difference between whether he considers you a throwback or a keeper. Say something akin to, you know, a girl's got to look hot and then twirl around so he can get a better view, and that man is going to do a mental calculation of just how fast he can get you into the bed, and whether he can suddenly switch his workout time so he doesn't have to see you again after he hits it. A man will determine just from those seven words and that tiny action that you're a woman who can be easily had. Someone who's out for a good time and is getting herself in shape solely to keep her body looking right so that guys can look at it and really enjoy it. I assure you, the next few sentences out of his mouth likely will involve some serious attempts to reel you in. And if you bite, he'll get you hook, line, and sinker. And then he'll keep it moving. But respond to him by saying something like, "Thanks. My health is important to me, and working out is a great way to keep in shape." And he knows that he's going to have to dig a little deeper to find out more about you. This is no guarantee that he will think you're a keeper. You'll have to do a bit more talking than that simple line. But at the very least, he won't immediately peg you as a throwback. Your comments may lead him to talk about why he works out, which could lead to a meaningful conversation about a mutual interest you both have for staying in shape. And that could lead to him asking more questions, for which a keeper will have plenty of answers, laced, of course, with enough requirements to let this man know that you're a keeper, someone who is looking for a man who will stick around. Now, revealing that you're a keeper is no guarantee that this guy won't just walk away. Some men really are just sport fishing and have no intention of doing anything more than throwing back the women they bed. If this is the case with this man, then let him walk. What do you care? He's not the guy you're looking for. I know that you and your girls have been told for years on end that you just don't pass up any opportunities when a man walks your way. He could be the one. But I'm here to tell you that this philosophy is just plain dumb. Women are smart. You all can tell when your friends are lying. You know when your kids are up to no good. Co-workers can't get anything past you at the job. You're quick to let each one of them know that you're not stupid, that you see them coming a mile away, and you're not going to let them play that game with you. But when it comes to your relationships with the opposite sex, all of that goes out the window. You relinquish your power and lose all control over the situation. Cede it to any old man who looks at you twice, just because he happened to look at you twice. All I'm telling you to do is be smart about it. Know that if this man isn't looking for a serious relationship, you're not going to change his mind just because you two are going out on dates and being intimate. You could be the most perfect woman on the Lord's green earth. You're capable of interesting conversation. You cook a mean breakfast. You hand out back rubs like sandwiches. You're independent, which means to him that you're not going to be in his pockets. But if he's not ready for a serious relationship, he's going to treat you like a sports fish. A perfect example of this is in this strawberry letter. These are letters the Steve Harvey Morning Show receives from its listeners, sent in by a woman who clearly was just starting to realize she was nothing more than a plaything. "I have been seeing this man for 6 months, and everything seemed cool until January of this year. We've gone out and visited each other's homes, but all of a sudden he stopped calling, and when I call him, he seems excited, but then he is very short with me. He plans trips and cancels them. And when I ask him if we should cut off all communication, he says no. But he doesn't act like he wants to be bothered. I don't know what happened, and I still like him, but it just bothers me to know that something could be on his mind that he is not sharing with me, or maybe he has found a woman and wants to keep me in his back pocket. He's sport fishing, and in her heart she knows this, but she's still trying to hang in there and see if he's going to do right by her. Any woman in this situation should just leave that guy alone, instead of investing all this time and energy in a man who can't and won't live up to your expectations. Let that guy walk. And then when the next guy comes along, take control and let him know your ground rules up front. I don't take phone calls after 10 p.m. because my kids are asleep and I'm getting my rest. I appreciate a man who shows up when he says he's going to show up and calls when he's going to be late. And I don't have sex with anyone until I'm sure that we are in a serious, committed relationship. No casual sex for me. Are all acceptable ground rules for any man coming at you. If those ground rules are too much for him, he's going to walk away because he's sport fishing. If, however, he has something going for himself, and he knows that in order to complete his life, he needs a woman who has something going for herself, he's going to stick around and keep the conversation going. That's the man who is willing to put in work, who knows that he's not going to just romance you, get what he wants, and walk away. That guy right there, he's your man. He's fishing for a keeper, and after he's proven himself worthy of your time, then you can let him take you on home, fillet you, put some cornmeal on you, fry you up, and serve you up on a delicious plate. Need more examples of differences between sports fish and keepers? Listen up. Number one. A woman who commands respect is a keeper. A woman who lets men get away with disrespecting her is a throwback. Number two, a woman who is dressed appropriately, has her goodies reasonably covered, but is still sexy, is a keeper. A woman who is scantily clad and dripping sex is a throwback. Number three, a woman who won't let you feel all over her body while you're dancing is a keeper. A woman who drops it like it's hot and puts on a dance floor performance that would make video vixen Corinne Steffens blush is a throwback. Number four, a woman who takes a man's number but doesn't give him her own is a keeper. A woman who hands out her home, work, and cell phone numbers and email and home addresses to a man who's done nothing more than buy her a drink and ask how he can reach her is a throwback. Number five, a woman who can hold a respectful, respectable conversation with a man and his mother is a keeper. A woman who shudders at the prospect of having to talk to the matriarch of a man's family is a throwback. Number six, a woman who can adapt to any situation thrown at her. She can hold her own at the PTA meeting, in the boardroom, in a restaurant, at a sporting event, is a keeper. A woman who can't put together a coherent sentence or makes it clear she has no interest in doing so is a throwback. Number seven, a woman who knows she wants to be married and raise a family and lets a man know this up front is a keeper. A woman who doesn't have a plan for her relationship life beyond next weekend is a throwback. Number eight, a woman whom we can introduce to our friends and family is a keeper. A woman we don't even bother introducing to our friends or family is a throwback. Number nine, a woman who smiles and takes care of herself and is generally happy with her life is a keeper. A woman who doesn't take care of herself and is sour all the time has an attitude wider than all the ocean and doesn't hesitate to lay somebody out for the slightest transgression is a throwback. Number 10. A woman who shows her appreciation for all that you do for her is a keeper. A woman who acts like nothing you do can make her happy is a throwback. Number 11. A woman who is loyal is a keeper. A woman who always has her eye out for the next best thing is a throwback. Number 12. A woman who understands that a man validates his manhood by who he is, what he does, and how much he makes, and who knows how to finesse her relationship so that her man feels like he's handling his business is a keeper. A woman who wields her paycheck and influence like a sword and belittles his career and financial contributions is a throwback. How to tell if you've met someone looking for a keeper or a throwback? Number one, if his conversation with you is extremely superficial and never seems to graduate beyond the surface, he's sport fishing. If he genuinely seems interested in your needs, life, desires, and future, then he's looking for a keeper. Number two, if he laughs off your requirements and standards, then he's sport fishing. If he seems willing to abide by your rules and actually follows through on them, then he's looking for a keeper. Number three, if he takes your phone number but waits longer than 24 hours to call, he's sport fishing. If he calls you right away, he's showing that he's genuinely interested in you and is most likely looking for a keeper. Number four, if he takes you out on a date and lets you pay or only kicks in his portion of the bill, he's sport fishing. If he pays the bill, he's showing that he's willing to provide for you, which means he's likely looking for a keeper. Number five, if he tells you he's going to be somewhere at a certain time and he consistently shows up late without so much as the courtesy of a phone call, he's probably sport fishing. If he shows up when he's supposed to, he's looking for a keeper. Number six, if you never meet his friends, family, co-workers, or other people who are important to him, he's sport fishing. If he introduces you to his people, he might be looking for a keeper. Number seven, if he keeps offering up excuses for why he can't meet your friends and family, he's sport fishing. If he agrees to go to the family barbecue or a social event where he will be introduced to family, friends, and co-workers, he might consider you a keeper. Number eight, if he cringes at the mere mention of children, he's sport fishing. If he's willing to meet your kids and shows up with gifts and can relate to them in a way that makes them comfortable with him, then he might consider you and your kids keepers. Number nine, if he does not have himself together financially, emotionally, and spiritually, he may be sport fishing. If he's capable of providing and protecting his potential family the way a real man should, then he might be searching for a keeper. Number 10, if he lobbies for an open relationship and says he's cool with you seeing other people, then he's sport fishing. If he wants your relationship to be exclusive and he agrees to date only you, he considers you a keeper. Chapter 7. Mama's Boys. Every day on the Steve Harvey Morning Show, my co-host Shirley and I have a really popular segment called Strawberry Letter 23. During which we invite our listeners to let us help them solve their problems. We get all kinds of emails and letters from people desperate for advice on how to handle wild kids, overly demanding bosses, cheating boyfriends, out-of-control babies' mamas, money-grubbing family members, horrible friendships, you name it. We hear about it. Some of the questions are extremely sad. Some of them are so surprising they make you want to clutch your chest. And some of them just make you shake your head and wonder how the person asking for advice made it through. The people who write those letters aren't doing it in a vacuum. For every problem addressed in Strawberry Letter 23, there are thousands of listeners out there dealing with the same drama in their own lives. We give our opinions on the situation and some sound suggestions for how they can get out of the mess they're in with the hope that the advice we're passing on helps not only the person who wrote us, but the legions of fans also looking for answers. A lot of the strawberry letters touched me, but one that stood out to me recently was from a woman who wrote an attention getter in the subject line. Did I marry a man or a boy? She went on to say that she's a 35-year-old woman who was married to a 30-year-old man She dated for 10 years before they got married about 6 months ago. She claimed that although their relationship is great, his controlling mother is driving her crazy. Here's some of what she wrote. She controls my husband like he is a little child. She calls on him to do everything. She calls my house late at night, and I can hear her through the phone screaming at him about something that she